That's me, Anton. And according to Fortune Cookie from Panda Express, people are waiting for cues from me. I'll talk about the spin density wave and superconductivity in nictites. And this is a somewhat different talk from the talks that so far we've heard here, because I'm stepping away from the microscopic and doing a semi-phenomenological model, in the sense that I don't want to predict all the parameters interactions in the system. I want to see what would be the experimental consequences of after assuming some basic properties of the system. And here, for example, we already assume that this is a mostly itinerant system, that anti-ferromagnetism is due to a spin density wave. The interesting point being that both these orders claim the same electronic states. And nictites are a multi-band system. So what would be the consequences of this competing interaction in this system? So the picture that I take is that we have a hole pocket in the center, and electronic pockets on the sides of the unfolded brillouin zone. So the central pocket we will denote by operator C, and electrons will be operators F. So we have then two fermionic bands and we assume that there is a hole band in the center, and let's say at pi zero we have electronic band with somewhat different dispersion. We'll we'll denote deviation from 0,0 by k vector, and for the electron band we will have a deviation from pi 0 by k vector. So effectively we're shifting this to the origin. Then we introduce two mean field order parameters. One, let's say, on the electronic, on the hole pocket. Given by this form, this is then simply pair hopping. Strength of pair hopping interaction between the electron band, let's say p minus p, how it jumps on the hole and in reverse. And similarly, we can introduce the order parameter on F band only replace F operators by C operators. And there is magnetic spin density wave order parameter that we take originating from this kind of pairing. What's left out here? Well, we don't have the localized moments. We forgot about the orbital structure of the Fermi surfaces. And also,
how do I understand this equation? Is it a vector on the vector side in space space, and on the side is a
what?
Yeah, sigma dot sigma is a scalar.
Well,
but on the left hand side, M is a vector, right?
Well, this is not exactly. This is not exactly. This is also a vector eventually. So when there is a matrix with times vector.
The question is whether it's, for example, no, the vector mz.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. You can think about it as a m dotted into sigma, something like that. Okay.
That's better.
Yeah. And so we don't discuss the nature of these interactions that's coming from presumably high energies. Then the Hamiltonian is IC. Plus superconductivity, which we assume to be singlet. And plus the magnetic order. Well, no, there is also, of course, delta F dagger terms, yeah.
And what's the other thing you
have? That's
also,
all.
What's there? You have some other.
Here?
Yeah.
Well, there is also, of course, delta F that's basically the same, only C instead of F. So there are two order parameters, on one on each of the bands, and in principle they are different, of course.
And can I just understand the meaning of the last of these three crosses? So what do you take for the V of interaction?
This is just the strength of the interaction. I don't know where it's coming from.
That's what you meant.
Yeah. So.
But in terms of, there's only one VSC and the VS1, VSTW in the model calculation?
Just one, yeah.
So if you see it for F, it's the same VSC.
What?
If you see it for F, it's the same.
Yes. It's the same, so V superconducting.
So you're going to treat the VSC, VSDW as two independent coupling constants, or?
These two, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so they are different.
That's fine, I just want to understand.
Well, it is a toy model in some sense, but it's still a good starting point to ask certain questions. Questions that we may ask is how the density wave goes into superconductivity and back. How does it evolve with doping? The reason is that we know that in 1-1-1-1 materials, usually we have some, I'll call it spin density wave, that suddenly drops and superconductivity begins through a first order sharp transition. On the other hand, in cobalt doped 1-2-2, there is an indication that there is a dome of magnetism, and there is a superconductivity region that coexists with the magnetism. Similar in phosphorus 1-2-2. And the whole doped material is unclear, because some experiments say that there are coexistence, there is coexistence region, some say no. So can we predict when this happens, when the first order transition happens, when the coexistence happens? How?
In 1-1-1, there's also coexisting region, right? Some show also in.
Maybe. Majority, I believe, is this type, right?
No.
It also depends on what particular type of 1-1-1 you're considering.
So, anyway, how this interplay depends on Fermi surface shape, nesting. How it depends on the strength. Of interactions. Also, how it depends on the symmetry of the order parameter. Namely, if it's S++, when the two order parameters are the same, or S++-, when the two order parameters are different by sign. So to characterize this, the Fermi surface shape, we introduce the following parameters. So if we have an electronic band and, let's say, a hole band, something like that, we introduce Xi parameter, which is Xi F minus Xi C divided by 2, and parameter delta Xi F plus Xi C divided by 2. So this parameter delta is basically somehow it measures the deviation of the shapes of the dispersions from each other, the difference between the shapes of the electronic and the hole dispersions. And by varying doping, we change the dispersion and we change the these two parameters.
We change the dispersion, not just the filling of the band, but actual dispersion?
Well, both. You lower...
You shift the band, or you should change the shape of the band?
Well, I think you can change both. Mostly, I think you change the depth of the band. But then the band can also differ at different energies. And when you lower,
when you calculate things, what will you do? You'll just shift.
I will not shift anything. This parameter delta can be described by delta zero plus delta 2 cosine 2 phi, where these two parameters is basically, I'll assume that there is a circular hole Fermi surface, and there is electronic Fermi surface in the form of ellipse. So this delta, it gives me on the Fermi surface, or Fermi, at zero energy, it gives this difference between the shapes of the two Fermi surfaces. So when I do the calculations, when I vary doping in the calculation, I vary delta 0 and delta 2. So the steps are the standard ones: calculate Green's function in Matsubara representation, so that we can calculate all parameters for arbitrary temperatures. And that's our Hamiltonian that has this block structure. We have superconductivity, let's say, in one band, superconductivity in the second band, and these two diagonal blocks or bands connected through the spin density order parameter M. And then, after we determine the Green's function, we solve self-consistency on delta and m, two order parameters in the system. After we do that, we calculate free energy, mostly to determine the position of first order transitions in a system using Wattner. Functional. Yeah.
There's about 5 minutes left for you.
Yeah, I know. I know it's not exactly necessary, but it's just
beautiful.
So, so the basic idea is that we are given transition temperature in superconducting state, transition temperature in magnetic state, and this delta zero plus delta two cosine two phi. We calculate m delta self-consistency parameters and the phase diagram. So let's look at the spin density wave normal transition. Let's say we vary the relative radii of the electronic and hole Fermi surfaces. So in this case, the transition starts to drop. That's a first order transition. Then at some point, it becomes first order transition. So this is second order, this is first order. That's delta 2 equal to 0. No elliptical distortion of electronic Fermi surface. If we have delta 2 not equal to 0, so here, this is perfect nesting. When delta 0 equal to delta 2 is equal to 0. If we start with some ellipticity of electronic Fermi surface, the transition temperature is already reduced, and it goes something like that. And there is a smaller region of first order transition.
I didn't hear what you said. If you start where? If you do what?
If you start with finite ellipticity.
Yes, got it. Yeah, fine.
If you have a first order transition, sometimes it's favorable to have also incommensurate. Spin density wave.
This is an FFLO phase diagram.
This is FFLO for superconductivity people.
Yeah. For magnetic.
For magnetic, yeah.
Or for magnetic.
Yeah, but that's basically exactly the same.
Now, superconducting TC, we assume that it doesn't depend on.
Gorkov spelled as LATKO.
Sorry, what happens if you change your interaction parameter?
Well, the interaction parameter is in TM. So effectively, it changes TM. So. But we remove the interaction parameter and high energy cutoff in favor of TM. So all our parameters that we vary is the ratio really between the superconducting and magnetic transition temperature and the shape of the Fermi surfaces.
So what determines exactly your delta zero or your change?
This one?
Yeah.
This determines, it's determined by basically the interaction strengths by TM. So the bigger TM, the further away you can go on this axis.
But if you measure temperature in units of TM, then there is not, as you defined, it's just a number.
Yeah, it will be just a number.
So do you have a prediction about what kind of spin density wave, incommensurate spin density wave, it might be?
What do you mean? The Q vector?
Yeah.
No, I don't think we can, shorter or longer. It's degenerate.
If we do an analogy with FFLO, then at least for delta 2 equal to 0, you know that Q should be more or less proportional to delta naught because it's like magnetic field.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So exactly, except that it appears starting at 5.
So is there similar to the, I mean, people have seen the incremental spin fluctuations in the pure potassium iron part. Is it going to be similar to that, or is it like Cupris, you have four spots? I guess that was my question.
Do we have four dots or two dots?
Yeah.
I think.
Oh.
That's not match your firm surface. It's like you do not only translate one of them by pi zero instead of just shorten.
Yeah, yeah. It's slightly shifted. The ellipse is slightly shifted relative to the circle, the centers of the two. So, and you can shift it in any direction you can. Of course, the more. In reality, you want to consider maybe several different shifts, several incommensuration parameters, and then it's a different problem. You have to.
Can be very complicated because for the superconducting state, like Roger Cope and Bowers in high energy physics studied, you know, it's very complicated crystal structure because depending on how you shift. You know, you shift the translation, let's say pi zero, and then you can maybe shift by large angle.
Yeah.
So it could form many complicated.
Nobody said it
should be single. Look, so
multiple. I don't want to interfere, but Anton, you have less than 5 minutes, definitely.
I know.
You didn't talk about.
Well, let me just. Let's say we have delta 2 is equal to 0. No ellipticity of the Fermi surface distortion. What we have then is this first order transition. And the superconducting transition, we assume, is independent of the clothing parameter. Then it just sharply approaches the spin density wave region. And then there will be just a first order transition between the two.
It doesn't matter whether I have a plus or a plus minus.
It does. This is assuming S plus minus. We'll talk maybe in a second about the S plus plus. If you have delta 2 not equal to 0, some ellipticity, then what you can have is a coexistence region. Where the two orders coexist. You can do in the vicinity of this point, you can do Ginzburg-Landau expansion and then compare different symmetries of the order parameter.
Can I ask you a question? Can you have inhomogeneous coexistence? I have an incommensurate SDW. Can I also generate superconductivity with a finite Q center of mass? There that will be have lower energy than the uniform superconductivity with this SDW.
Well,
why not? Why not?
It will cost you energy.
Well, but if it's incommensurate, because I gain the energy if I create that way,
it's still K minus K.
Well, the SDW is on a really short scale, right? And
the, looking at the deviations from the pi zero.
You mean the incommensurate? Well.
If it takes you too long, finish, and then we can discuss it separately.
Yeah, yeah. If you're saying that if you have an incommensurate spin density wave, yes.
You can.
There is some region.
Homogeneous superconductivity.
No, the superconductivity is homogeneous.
Why?
Because there's no magnetic field.
Why do I not gain energy?
Because there's no magnetic field.
Who cares?
Something.
Why can't... Wait, let me finish my question, then you'll answer it. Do you mind? Why should they not have higher amplitude of superconductivity, whereas the W have smaller amplitude? Because the two repel each other.
I'm not sure that you can think about the spin density wave as inhomogeneous.
Well, that depends on whether you just put the phase or whether you put the modulation. Right?
So
FF or LO? Which one are you considering?
Well, we're considering a low. Because plus Q and minus Q, they're absolutely the same. They appear simultaneously.
It's a real thing, right?
So it's a real thing.
Then
But then, I mean, this is already a real thing. It's already
a real object. But then you have amplitude modulation. And then given that
Well, the amplitude modulation is on the KF scale, right?
No, it's deviation from pi 0, the amplitude modulation.
I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Dennis, we'll talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. So, in S plus plus state, what happens? The likelihood of coexistence is much smaller. So even in delta 2 not equal to 0, even with finite ellipticity, the two orders, S plus plus and spin density wave, they do not coexist. They at all temperatures. However, they can coexist at some small temperatures, but its region very small.
So you assume that pure STW state, but in reality, in real systems, also orbital order or charge order or make.
We just consider just the STW.
So in that case, that a charge order parameter gives completely different works. Mm-hmm. So in that, if that orbital order is dominant, so S plus minus it can coexist. That is plus minus.
With the, so you were saying that you were adding third order to the problem?
Well, if consider the orbital order or charge order instead of STW.
Well,
so then the role of S plus minus, S plus plus is kind of diverse.
Yeah, diverse.
That's your point.
Yeah. So the problem is the which order is dominant mm-hmm. in orbital order or STW order?
Yeah, yeah.
The
so,
problem is not so simple.
I'm sure it's not. And as I said, that we kind of neglect the orbital decomposition of Fermi surfaces, so there is no orbital order, I think.
Because orbital order set is nature of orbital set.
Yeah, yeah. It's a question out there. Yeah.
Anton, are you at sort of at the end? Are we in the discussion period now, or do you have an essential message to convey?
Well, let me just write one more phase diagram, and I'll be mostly done. So let's look at zero temperature cut, basically, for different ellipticities and different radii of the Fermi surface. So here it's just the ellipticity change of the Fermi surfaces, and here just the radii different. So what we have for S plus plus state, this line here is, by the way, is where excitations first appear in spin density wave state. So we know that spin density wave state is somewhere close to the perfect nesting, and superconductivity S plus plus will be further away from this origin. So what we have is a first order transition between the two. It goes something like that. And here, in a small region here, you can have coexistence at low temperatures only. High temperature regime is very different. There is only first order transition. In the case of S plus minus state, again delta 2, delta 0, and this is t equals 0 limit, we have first region where excitations appear. There is a region of second order transition that becomes first order transition at low ellipticities, and then there is a something like that. Here is the region of superconductivity plus spin density wave. In this case, even if there are excitations,
what do you mean there are excitations? What do you mean?
Excitations in spin density wave state. The Fermi surface appears in spin density wave state.
Oh.
It's not enough to induce the coexistence. The two orders repel each other. Here, we have, let's say here, from this side approaching this transition, this point, The excitations has not appeared yet. The Fermi surface has not appeared yet. But the superconductivity is strong enough to claim part of the Fermi surface to nucleate itself, and producing the coexistence states. Well, I can stop here.
I think probably if you have the incommensurate SDW, my understanding is that probably ZS, you should have an incommensurate FFO, because SDW breaks the, it's a spin triplet, in the sense you break the spin degenerates. So like locally, you have a, you spin up and firming down, spin up and down, chemical potentials are normally the same, locally. If I think about the similar classical feature, mm-hmm. So your SDW is modulating in the space. So your U up and U down are not the same. So that actually effectively created kind of a field, you know, region. It gives the possibility of having the FFO phase. So I'm not saying you will get.
But it depends on how strong the magnetic field is.
You were right.
Then any time when pairing is due to magnetic fluctuations at non-zero momentum, you would get superconducting state with non-zero Q, which is not the key.
There are two FFLO states being bandied around. So I think you're talking about actual FFLO state in a superconductor. Very often during this talk, one talked about fictitious FFLO state, which is a particle hole transformed equivalent.
It may potentially induce.
I understand.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the answer to that often is no.
I agree.
So, however, let me try to finish my I think, but usually we also know if you have a small magnetic field, just like a cluster, usually the superconducting state does not like that. So does not want to go to the flow phase. It prefers the homogeneous phase. So there will be a kind of resistance. That means if you go back, that means the system has a resistance going into the incommensurate SDW. Maybe that's the one that's really.
The system
wants to be homogeneous superconducting state.
Well, it's a, basically it's a balance of all the energy terms that
so
you can
So it's a very
have.
Subtle.
It's a subtle.
But any difference will be small, I think.
So when you say Lattinger word free energy, what you really mean is a mean field?
Using the Lattinger word general functional to get the free energy functional in mean field.
Self-energy is the mean field self-energy.
It's a self-energy with two coupling constants.
Okay.
Second. You mentioned beautifully this FFLO state of the particle hole transformed variety, so fictitious FFLO state, which really describes an incommensurate spin density wave. And comments are made from the audience. This is a work dating back to excitonic instability being represented as BCS and so on. Now, interesting thing here, imagine that you have a system that's quite two-dimensional. In recent years, prompted by the developments in ultra-cold atomic gases, there'd be lots of effort, some of it successful, to understand FFLO-like states in two dimensions. And actually, there are some exact results that can be derived. And so for those who have expertise in this area, it would not be impossible to try to go a little bit beyond the mean field description and see to what extent this analogy can be pursued in searching for incommensurate spin density wave in nickels.
You mean in the
quasi-one-dimensional? Yeah, so in the quasi-2D system, as opposed to three-dimensional system. If you are from former Soviet Union, this is often called Gorkov excitonic instability. If you are from United States, it's often called Halperin-Rice. But they all share the fact that they are in three dimensions. If you do the same thing in two dimensions, there are recently, in the last, say, 10 or 15 years, strong, almost exact, and some exact results in two dimensions. Mm-hmm. When looking at FFLO type states. And so if you now make your particle hole transformation into fictitious FFLO states which describe incommensurate spin density, some of these might be applicable and you might be able to move further from just a mean field.
Okay.
but and just for indication purposes, how the state looks like?
Well, the state, okay, so there is additional complication because it's not just two Fermi surfaces that you so nicely drew and then erased, but there is Unkalt because, so the ground state often will be what ultra-cold people call breached pairing state. So you basically actually stay in, you can stay incommensurate for longer than you would have in ordinary isotropic translation invariant case.
Right, but solution is still in some sort of cosine form, or it's more like hyperbolic tangent?
Well, I think at weak coupling, it would be closer to cosine, I guess. Mm-hmm.
For the breached pair, my friend Griffin and I talked about the homogeneous
You are right. Yes. So what happens is that
it's a kind of mismatch from the surface, but it's the homogeneous.
You are correct. Yeah. There is an Unkalt effect here. You see, it's not an isotropic translation invariant problem. Mm-hmm. There is actual lattice, underlying lattice. And therefore, the system clings to commensurability longer than it would have done in isotropic translationally homogeneous space.
Look, I thought there were also arguments that the breached state at weak coupling is not actually happening. I thought it was a paper by Lovecraft or something like that.
In continuum. But yes. Here, you see, because you are on a lattice, there is Unkalt terms that may make it, that can stabilize commensurate state, which in this language would be like breached.
Okay, we're starting moving in a slightly different direction, so I guess we need to move to the second talk. Thanks.
You're not using the light. Okay.
I have to use it. That's fine.
Well, that would be natural.
First of all, I'd like to thank the organizers, especially Professor Chibukov, for giving me a nice opportunity to present my recent studies on iron neckties. So my name is Ryotaro Arita, and from University of Tokyo, Japan. And Ryotaro is maybe a bit long to remember. For most of you, so just call me the first part of my name, Rio de Janeiro, yeah? And the place Olympic game will be held next year, Rio. So before going to my talk, I have to apologize that in this talk, actually, my talk is nothing to do with the coexistence of antiferromagnetism and superconductivity. But yesterday, Professor Chebukov kindly told me that maybe my talk will stimulate the discussion on the normal state of iron neckties between ourselves. So taking these opportunities, I would like to introduce some of my recent studies. The first one is this paper titled "Is Fermi Surface Nesting the Origin of Superconductivity in Iron Neckties?" So this work was done in collaboration with Ikeda-san in the audience. And the second one, if I have a time, I'd like to introduce this work, which was done in collaboration with people in Vienna. And actually, this work was finalized when I was in Santa Barbara. Last March, title is dichotomy between large local moment and small order magnetic moment in iron-based superconductors. And the message, one of the big message of the first part is the flex fluctuation exchange approximation, which is usually very successful and powerful method from weak coupling, has some problem when we apply it to iron nictite. And this problem is usually we do not discuss or mention explicitly, especially in front of experimentalists. We have many theories, and taking this occasion, I'd like to discuss what kind of this the problem this approximation has when we apply to iron nictites, and how I'd like to explain how we are dealing with this problem. And especially, I would like to discuss all of you whether there is any better method ways to fix or overcome the problem. And if we I have a time, I would like to also discuss how magnetism is described in non-perturbative method, dynamical mean field theory, in the context of the localized or itinerant picture. So yesterday, Kuroki-san has already explained that in random phase approximation, how we can understand the material dependence of superconductivity in iron nictite. So in the first principles calculation, we have three or four kind of film surfaces, and between these film surfaces we have many kinds of channels, and among these channels the pairing scattering channels of between x square and y square state is most important. Here I'm assuming that x and y axis is pointing to Earth inside. And we have seen that this state at pi-pi in the unfolded Brillouin zone is the key to understand the material dependence of the bearing symmetry in the S plus minus scenario. And indeed, if we look at the band structure of a variety of W11-1111 systems, indeed we can see that system with higher transition temperature has a high position of Earth inside, and indeed we have dx square and y square state around pi pi. But on the other hand, for system with lower temperature, lower TC, the state of the levels of x square and y square is much lower than that of ITC systems. And if we look at the spin susceptibility for the channel of x square and y square, indeed, in the case of arsenide, we have these channels, so we have a big structure around pi zero. But on the other hand, in the case of phosphide, we do not have this channel, so there is no peak around pi zero. And so in RPA analysis, pairing instability is, sensitivity depends on whether we have x square and y square state around pi pi. So the next natural question is whether this state is robust against the inclusion of self energy. So in principle, the self energy is momentum dependent and also orbital dependent. So self energy can basically change the situation. And indeed, if we look at the results of dynamical mean field theory, ADA plus DMFT. So ADA plus DMFT calculation was done by many groups, but if you look at the results of Paris group, we indeed see that the levels of x minus y square goes down if we introduce the self-energy correction. So this is indeed a bad news for S plus minus pairing. So, but in DMFT, we neglect the momentum dependence in the self-energy. So it is interesting to consider what happens if we introduce the momentum dependence in the self-energy. So it's quite interesting to go beyond RPA and go to flex. And up to now, flex calculation have been done by many people, but as far as I know, the first person who applied flex calculation to five orbital model is, I think, Ikeda-san. And in 2008, in his paper, he performed flex calculation and self-consistent second-order perturbation calculation to the five orbital Hubbard model. And he considered the effect of momentum dependent self energy. And in his paper, he already pointed out that when we introduce the momentum dependent or orbital dependent of self energy, something strange happens in ionic type. So, namely, we have a strange film surface and pi pi of z squared. And eventually, the so-called pi zero fluctuation becomes weak, and the pi pi fluctuation becomes more and more dominant.
Can I ask one question? This calculation, no doubt it's correct one, but you look at experiment, and for a number of nictites, there is a Fermi surface at gamma point, and it doesn't have z squared symmetry.
Yeah, experimentally, I think we do not have a Fermi surface of z squared. But 1, 2, 3, of course, at z point, we have Fermi surface of z squared, but especially in W11 system, we do not expect this big Fermi surface of z squared. So this is not a good situation. So he introduced an artificial level shift of z square and pushed down this state. But honestly speaking, I didn't like this scenario because this treatment, because transfer hopping or other on-site energies are obtained by first principle calculation. But this level shift is something artificial. So we can choose any numbers of any size of level shift. So
so the conclusion here is that you think that the self-energy calculated by flex near this gamma prime point is incorrect.
So he introduced this level shift and removed the film.
No, I understand that, but I mean, so this, as Andrei, I guess, said, this is not what's typically happening in the material we think, and therefore it's probably a better flex. Is that the message?
I'm going to discuss that. Yeah.
Sorry.
Another question, but you cannot just remove one of the pockets because you still have to satisfy the Lassinger theorem in flex. So what's happening then? So you have to increase the some other pockets in the calculation. So what's happening?
So you're saying that if we remove this frame surface, then other...
You cannot do it because in flex, the Lassinger theorem is conserved, so you have to...
So this contribution should be pushed to these frame surfaces.
That's okay, because what happened is that when this z squared becomes too high, based on the original count, by removing it, you actually get it back, recover. The experimental Fermi surface will be recovered because now the size will be right. Lassinger count will be right.
If you shift it, but if you do not, then then you still have to get it within the flex, because in flex you still have to get the latent
latency. If you shift, it's okay. If you move it,
no, it says that if you shift, you don't conserve anymore, you don't satisfy anymore the
latency.
But you start by shifting.
Shift one.
You start by shifting it.
Sorry. Let him continue. Yeah.
Okay. So then I thought that it is okay if we make a model without z square. Then we do not have to worry about the strange behavior of z square. So using the techniques of maximally localized Wannier function proposed by Marzari and others, and we constructed a model, four-orbital model without z square. And assuming that z square is not the key player for the low energy physics, and we can forget about it, and we consider a model without z. And so in this model, the basic feature of the original five orbital band model is conserved. So we employed this model and performed flex calculation. And so first, let us look at the results of weak coupling regime. So in RPA calculation, if we look at the spin susceptibility, we have a sharp peak at pi zero, which corresponds to the collinear type antiferromagnetism. But on the other hand, if we look at the spin susceptibility of flex, then the peak is heavily suppressed because of self energy. And so,
but if you change U or U prime, you still can put this peak up.
I will show you later. So, this result suggests that moderately large U is needed to have strong antiferromagnetic instability. And
again, I don't think that this can be a sort of self-consistent statement, because in flex you don't include the vertex correction. So what will happen is that U will rearrange in reality.
So we should tune the number of U. Yeah, that is one. Yeah, I agree. So on the other hand, recently, Miyake-san in Tsukuba and Kazuma Nakamura and Professor Imada in my department, I recently estimated the size of Hubbard U for various iron nictite by the so-called constrained RPA method. And we found that the system is in the moderately correlated regime. And so depending on the the anion height from the iron layer, the system becomes the value of interaction parameters is different. But basically, so W11 system is less correlated because the hybridization between P and D is strong. But if the anion height becomes higher and higher, then the hybridization becomes weak and weak, and the Wannier function becomes more and more correlated, and the system is strongly correlated. But anyway, we have to introduce moderately large U.
What's T in this unit? Nearest neighbor?
T is the transfer between xy and xy, as far as I remember.
How much in electron volts would that be about? If you would give it a number in electron volts?
Electron volts, this is about 3 electron volts. And then we increase the number of U and U prime. And then what happened is the following. So actually, the peak at pi zero doesn't become dominant, but the peak at pi becomes higher and higher. So if we apply plane flex, then we have G-type antiferromagnetism.
At
isn't it consistent with the most recent materials? Selenite materials?
I have no idea for that system. I have not yet performed calculation, but at least for W11 systems, this antiferromagnetism had never been observed. So in this sense, this result is not so happy for us. And
just a quick question. So W11 system, am I right that there are people who does DFT calculation and find that the GCAP, which you also find,
In DFT,
if you put it by hand, right? The energy of such a computation
the energy of
much higher than the
I think so.
So actually this is not crazy, because DFT results find this kind of computation, the energy is not much higher than the theta.
Am I right? Huh? And so
you're right, but you're not crazy.
Huh? So the reason why we have pi is falling. So if we look at the absolute value of Green function at the lowest mass bar frequency, in RPA we have a strong spectra at pi, and so the scattering between pi and pi zero is dominant. But if we introduce momentum dependent self energy, then this spectrum is suppressed, and so pi zero and scattering between pi zero and zero pi becomes dominant. So this is the reason why we have peak at pi. So
if you don't mind, let me quickly ask a question. So you're comparing RPA and flex, and since you wanted to go into something that we normally don't talk to experimentalists, so let me ask the question. There is some, you know, flex is approximation. Approximation that neglects vertex correction includes self-energy correction. Yeah. In Cuprates, at least words in favor of this approximation is that you have overdumped bosons that are slow compared to fermions, and this is why vertex corrections are small. Did you calculate dynamical susceptibility? Can you justify
omega?
Yeah. Can you justify flex? In the sense that are vertex corrections really small?
Chi over omega means spin susceptibility. Chi S of omega. So this is static part, but...
Right. But what I'm trying to say, to ask is, do we have any justification for flex for this systems? Flex is approximation.
Yes. I know. But the position of peak is already not consistent with the experiment.
So you think it's bad anyway?
It's already problematic, no? The position is already pi.
Is it better or worse, expected to be better or worse than for cuprates? Is flex, do you expect flex works for the necktimes better than it works for cuprates?
In cuprates, at least the position of the peak at static part.
That's from the results, but from the method, looking at the method itself.
There was a comparison with Monte Carlo of expensive flex comparisons that down around U of 4 to U of 6 looked reasonable a while back. And then recently we've made other checks. It seems to represent some of the frequency and momentum dependence fairly well. Vickers and White did a lot of work on this a long time ago.
I guess physically it's because you have overdone slow bosons compared to...
It should be the same here, or...
This is what I'm asking. Is it true or not? Go ahead.
I just want to understand what the message is. So the message here is that if you do this calculation, in spite of the fact that the Fermi surfaces are nested with pi zero wave factor, you end up with a pi.
Yeah. Here we have weak spectrum, still there is a scattering, but this scattering is more strong.
Is it much stronger or is it a little bit stronger?
Okay.
Maybe I ask just a similar question that Andre asked, but a bit different. If I look at the imaginary part of the susceptibility as a function of frequency, either at the pi or pi zero momentum, where it's peaked. So do we know where is the peak position?
The energy.
Yeah, the energy position of the peak. So if you have an overdamped spin fluctuation, what is the energy position of this peak in this picture that you've shown? Do you know
in this plane flex, honestly speaking, I have not seen.
What is the position of the omega itself?
Omega of
this no, the spin fluctuation.
The imaginary part of cusp has a peak. Where is that peak? Where is the energy of that peak?
Maybe this is the last slide of
my talk. Imagine this peak is going to be much higher than theta. It's going to be heavier than the
you need to continue, otherwise it will be a non-stop discussion.
So maybe this is the last slide of my talk. So after this paper, actually, Ikeda-san and I, together with Jan Kunis in Prague, published two papers using flex calculation. And in this calculation, what we treat this problem is just introduce a constraint that the real part of the self-energy collection to be zero. Then it seems that we get some reasonable result. But here I want to discuss that whether there is any better treatment or deal with this problem. Okay. So I'm afraid time is old.
Ordinarily, if you set K to K Fermi, presumably in flex, that would be set to zero because of the adjustment you can do the potential. Isn't that fair?
Well, it's much better, so that's in the plot.
Ordinarily, in flex, I thought that when you went to K Fermi, we always demanded that this be set to zero so as to conserve whatever you were doing with your chemical potential.
But this constraint is momentum dependent and...
Yeah, that's what I had. So it's for all K.
Constant shift.
It's for all K, not just K and K Fermi, is the point. And that's right. What makes the difference.
And well, just taking the damping into account, right? You just throw the real part away.
No, it's more than that. He throws away also correction to Fermi velocity by requiring that for all K, real part of self-energy
exactly.
Is zero.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It reduces the relative shift between what you don't want to have, that's what
he means. In this experience, so it's enough to, if by subtracting the constant. So I think momentum dependence, so it's too much, I think. So this statement is too much.
But the issue here is that they have the z-squared coming up, right? And so if you don't control it,
the point is just to change the level of each frame size or orbital. The static part, momentum independent part.
But in this case,
may I interrupt for a second? We're approaching coffee time. We'll have time for discussion after next talk. So if you want, if you can make a statement and conclude your talk, it would be great.
So this is actually the conclusion or the problem, the issue we should discuss.
Okay, thanks very much.